Welcome, everybody, to today's episode of The Lindsay Elmore Show. Today's show is all about how can we become better stewards of our environment. All day, every day, we are constantly consuming and getting rid of excess and throwing things away. And yet, we don't necessarily take a moment to take a step back and say, how does this impact the greater world around me? Today, I'm going to be speaking with Catherine Kellogg. She is a going zero waste advocate, and we talk about simple ways that you can start in your own home to reduce your environmental footprint. Because the more that we reduce our environmental footprint, the more that our environment is able to provide for us clean air, clean water, and clean food that helps to keep us all healthy. After that, I'm going to tell you a bit about why I compost and how I started my first compost pile, some compost piles that I have seen around, my newest compost pile, which is the first ever compost tumbler that I've ever had, and why I recommend going and buying worms. Let's get to the show. Welcome to The Lindsay Elmore Show, a podcast that helps you find fulfillment amidst chaos. On this show, I interview thought leaders, doctors, creatives, spiritual gurus, and game changers who inspire you to pursue your dreams, overcome obstacles, and leave your mark. Catherine Kellogg is the founder of Going Zero Waste, a lifestyle website dedicated to helping others live a healthier and more sustainable life. She's a spokesperson for plastic-free living for National Geographic. She is the chief sustainability officer at One Movement and the author of 101 Ways to Go Zero Waste, which breaks eco-friendly, sustainable living down into easy-to-follow, step-by-step processes, complete with lots of positivity and love. Catherine Kellogg, welcome to The Lindsay Elmore Show.
Thank you so much for having me.
So when I was in fourth grade, I picked up a copy of a book about recycling because I wanted to do something to help. And I was so proud of myself because at my after school program, I started a club where I could raise awareness about the importance of recycling. And then when I read the book, it was like, start a club in your area. And I was like, I am so ahead of my time right now. So ahead of my time. So you teach people how to go zero waste, which is an extraordinarily difficult thing to do if you've never conceptualized, like, where do I even begin this whole process? When did your love and passion for the environment and living in this minimalist way, where did it begin?
So there's so much you said I want to unpack. I mean, first of all, you're way ahead of me in the fourth grade, way ahead of me. So I'm from Arkansas, which is not the most progressive state in America. I think we can all agree on that. And I was not raised by a family that, respect isn't the right word, but a family that didn't go out of their way to take care of the environment. We didn't recycle growing up. We just weren't living a super eco-friendly life. So for me, I actually started making a lot of zero waste changes out of financial necessity. I was a full-time professional working actor. I was living in actor housing. I wasn't making a bunch of money. And so I started using reusable products rather than disposable ones because it saves you a lot of money. And then I also started making a lot of these changes for health reasons, and using eco-friendly cleaners not only saves you money, it's also better for your health. You know what you're spraying in the environment. Trying to reduce my plastic usage, I was having a lot of health problems. My hormones were really imbalanced. And then when I moved out to California, it all clicked for me that everything I was doing for my personal health wasn't only better for me, but also better for the health of the planet. And then I just got really excited and I started writing about it, saving money, better for your health. And then a lot of people just really took notice. And when we talk about living a zero waste lifestyle, for me, it's not about fitting all your trash in a mason jar. I think that's kind of an unrealistic expectation. And instead, it's just about living a more eco-friendly lifestyle. When I talk about it now, I simply say, you know, I run a website that's dedicated to helping people reduce their trash or live a more sustainable life, because I love the word sustainable. There's so much that's encompassed in that word. It's not just about the planet. It's also about you, because we have non-renewable resources as well. The planet does, so do we. Time, right? Mm-hmm. Time is a non-renewable resource. We are never getting back. So I want to make sure that what I'm doing is that I'm approaching this from a really holistic point of view that also puts people and the planet in a way that we can make sustainable changes that are better for everyone.
I love what you said, and it reminds me, just this morning I was doing a class about functional medicine, and this morning we were talking about stress and talking about the hypothalamus and the pituitary and the adrenals and the thyroid and the gut and the immune system. And the presenter said, you need to think about stress as a bank account. As you said, getting all of your trash into a mason jar is not realistic. But if you can look at, well, here's my overall output of what I am throwing away that I cannot reuse, that I cannot recycle, and cannot be made into something else or given away. And then here is what I am consuming. If you can minimize those deficits, then you are making an impact. And so talk to us about some of the changes that you made, because, you know, you said that you were facing these health problems and hormones were imbalanced. What were some of the first changes that you began to make, and which ones do you still do, and which ones are you like, oh, never again?
That's so funny, because the things that are still my favorite are the things I started with. And that's what I really like. So up first, cleaning products. It is so easy to make your own cleaning products. And as I've gotten older, I've started DIYing less. The idea of making deodorant does not appeal to me anymore, but the idea of making a cleaning product still does, because it will literally take you 30 seconds. That is not hyperbole, 30 seconds. And then you can clean your whole home, and it costs 2 cents, right? It's amazing. I love making my own cleaning products. That was the first place I started. The second place I started is I really started reducing a lot of animal products in my diet. As we all know, animal agriculture has a huge footprint on the planet. And I know for a lot of reasons, I don't tell people to go vegan. I just don't. There's so many external factors that dictate someone's diet that it's just not my MO. But I do think we can reduce a lot of the animal products we consume. On average, according to, in 2018, they basically took how much meat Americans consume and just divided it by every American, and it came out to 0.6 pounds of meat a day. That doesn't include...
Oh, that's a lot.
A lot. And that doesn't include eggs and dairy and other animal products. That's just meat. That's a lot of meat. And the only thing I think all nutritionists agree on is that Americans should probably eat more vegetables. We just don't eat a lot of vegetables. On average, Americans diet 4% of their diet is fresh fruits and vegetables. That's it. Mm. Only 4% of their diet. And that's not a lot. And as we know, fruits and vegetables have a lot of really great vitamins and minerals in them. So, and they're also, vegetables are really inexpensive compared to meat. And like beans, the cost comparison of beans to meat and broccoli to beef, right? It's just a lot cheaper to get beans and broccoli. So out of financial necessity as well, I started eating a more plant-based diet. And that has been one of the really, really great things for my health, trying to eat more fruits and vegetables. Of course, you're going to feel a lot better, save a lot of money. And then the third thing that I really tackled was, cleaning. And then we had, diet. Oh, and then beauty products. Beauty products is kind of the third tier, which I did make quite a few skincare products when I first started out because I really enjoyed that. but I don't really enjoy it anymore. And there's a lot of really good sustainable alternatives on the market. If you're really doing this to save money, making your own, definitely the way to go. But if you're looking to save more time and then just simply opt for greener and cleaner alternatives, then getting them store-bought. But I found one of the best ways of just saving money is to reduce down to a capsule of products and not buying things I don't need.
Absolutely. When, you know, we have makeup that just sits around for years and years and years. And I remember I have strategically gone through and cleaned a lot of that out. And even looking at the packaging that beauty products come in can be very, very helpful. So going for maybe the drop-in size containers versus the full size, etc. I want to go back to what you said about diet, because this is something that we talk a lot about on the Clean Slate Cleanse. And I think that people don't quite understand the environmental impact of the food that we eat. 1/3 pound of a hamburger patty, which is a fairly normal size hamburger, takes 660 gallons of water, whereas to cultivate one apple takes 18 gallons of water. An orange takes 13 gallons of water. 1 pound of chicken is 470 gallons of water versus the 215 that you would get from a pound of soybeans. The other thing that is critical is the bioaccumulation of toxins. So all of these toxins that are out in the environment that we're so cautious, you know, not to have beauty products that have phthalates and not to have harsh chemical cleaners like ammonia, all of that environmental runoff that is coming from the raising of meat products. We grow more corn and soybean to feed meat in this country when we all just could be eating corn and soybean if there were healthy, non-genetically modified options out there for us. And so when you begin to make these changes, when did you start to notice that, hey, I'm actually feeling really better? Did it happen overnight where you just kind of started recognizing that, hey, I'm feeling better and I feel like I'm doing something productive for the environment? Or was it a much more slow transition?
It was a very slow transition, because it started in 2010, and I wouldn't say I feel like I had accomplished a lot of what I set out to achieve, basically kind of the person you see today, until 2016. So we're talking 5 to 6 years. I did this very slowly over a very long period of time. And I don't talk about this a lot because it sounds very snake oil salesman-y, and that's the farthest thing. Is not who I am, but I had a lot of chronic pain. And one day in 2015, I woke up and realized that I hadn't had any chronic pain for about 6 months, and I haven't had an episode since. And I know that a lot of the lifestyle changes I was making, I can attribute to that. I don't think that there's any one particular or specific thing I did. I think it was just an accumulation. And one of my favorite books is Estrogeneration. And it basically talks about all the synthetic estrogens that are in so many of our products. Things like your mattress, our carpets, plastics, of course, cleaning products, beauty products, all these things have these really small amounts of synthetic estrogen. And maybe coming into contact with one or two a day wouldn't be so bad. But the fact is, we are inundated with them and they're everywhere. And so we just kind of build up so much in our endocrine system that it can cause adverse effects for some people.
Mm-hmm, absolutely. When you think about how much is out there that is in the environment, and it also goes back to the consumption of meat, because I hear so many people talking about like phytoestrogens, all these estrogens that are in plants, and are they bad for breast cancer? Are they going to throw my PCOS out of whack? But what we don't think about is that when we consume meat, the majority of animals that are slaughtered are female. You know, we eat hens, not roosters. And we typically have heifers and not bulls as the way that meat is slaughtered. Well, we don't have phytoestrogens in those animals. We have actual estrogens and actual testosterones and actual cortisol that is biologically identical to what is in our bodies. And so we get it all out of whack. I've never heard of this book, Estrogeneration, and so I cannot wait to read that. So our listeners have to be thinking, like, what does your day look like? What does, you know, what is a shopping trip? If, you know, if Catherine were to take me on a shopping trip, what would it entail? Because I think what you're saying sounds very simple. Change your cleaning products, change your beauty products, and change your diet to be more environmentally focused. But tell us what you consider when you go to the grocery store, when you're shopping for clothing, when you are looking around your home. What goes through your mind?
Yeah, this is a great question. Thank you for asking this, because I love to say this. Our days probably started very similarly. We woke up, we brushed our teeth, right? You know, we washed our face, we put on clothes, we sat down at our computers, right? We have a very similar morning. I do the same thing. My day is not radically different. I don't like wake up and roll around in a mud pile, right? Like, I do very similar things. But instead of a plastic toothbrush, I used a bamboo toothbrush. I use for my moisturizer, for a beauty product, it came in a glass jar and it's from a really sustainable company. And it's just kind of about being a little bit more conscious with my purchases. And I have to say, the best thing I did, the absolute best thing that I recommend everyone start with, is the easiest, simplest thing that anyone can do. And that is wait. That is it. That is the one thing, patience, which is so difficult. I mean, that's one of the most difficult things in the world, I think. Patience and contentment, those are the two things that you really need to cultivate in your life. Mm. And I think that's one of the reasons why living this way leads to a happier life, because patience and contentment are two very core principles of minimalism as well, which we've seen how that can have a really big boost on happiness. And I, as a former shopaholic who loved shopping, and I loved thrifting too. So, I mean, I loved thrifting. So it wasn't all unsustainable fast fashion, but I still loved collecting and accumulating clothes. And so what I've done now is I've basically put a 30-day buy ban on myself. Obviously, non-necessities, right? I'm not going to be like, oh, I wonder if I'm going to want spaghetti in 30 days. No. But if I'm out, and I'm someone who's so susceptible to marketing. I see something, I'm like, oh, I need it. And then I just buy it, right? And so a great example is Mamma Mia 2, the overall she wears, obsessed. I still think about them. But my thing is as soon as I saw that, I was like, I need overalls. I've gotten to a 2-hour black hole of the internet searching, like, must find overalls, just Googling. And then I told myself, you just have to stop. If in 30 days you still feel like overalls are the absolute best thing you could ever get in your entire life, you can go crazy. But you have to wait 30 days. And the thing is that after that time passes, you realize you're never going to wear those overalls. Overalls don't really, my body shape, they just don't really work. I've got very big hips, narrow shoulders, like overalls. It's just not a look for me. I just don't think it's a look for me. And so after waiting, I'm able to have a less influenced decision, right? A more logical decision where I can actually assess what would work with my wardrobe and the things that I have. And so that's the biggest recommendation, is just simply waiting 30 days.
Yeah, giving yourself that time to decide if you actually need it. I know I watched the Minimalist documentary, and I did a minimalist challenge where I didn't allow myself to buy anything, like nothing, for a month. And it is astonishing how quickly your brain can adjust to not buying things impulsively. And it actually feels really, really good. And I actually wore this shirt in honor of you today. I have had this shirt for probably 15 years, maybe a little less. No, yeah, 15 years I've had this shirt. And I think that we learned listening to Carrie Summers here on the podcast, who is the CEO and founder of Fashion Revolution. She talks about how when we just churn through these clothes, it's not only harming the environment, but very often the workers that made those clothes are not paid well. They're not paid livable wages. They're working in very dangerous conditions. And so simply by shifting that mindset to, I have to wait 30 days if I really, really want those overalls or the shirt or whatever, is not only going to be good for you because you're not hemorrhaging money, it's also good for the environment because you're not creating excessive waste, but you're also giving you're giving manufacturers the understanding that quality is more important than I gotta have it, no matter what. So what do you say to people when they say, okay, I'm doing fairly well in my house. I've got all my organic cleaners. You know, we take our mason jars to buy in bulk at the grocery store. We never forget our reusable bags. How do people get more involved in their communities? And what are some of the legislative issues that you think are important for people to talk with their senators and their congresspeople and their local mayors, et cetera, that can make the whole world a better place?
I love this question. I love civic duty and like civic engagement. It's more, I'm so passionate about it. But before we go to that, I just wanted to mention one thing about what you're talking about, churning out clothes. It also makes us unhappy. Mm. And I think that's something that's a really big thing that's also missed when you're constantly trying to consume more and more. You're in a constant state of wanting more and you aren't grateful for what you have. And it puts you in a state of feeling like you're never enough and you never have enough. And so there's also a mental aspect to it as well. And when I bet when you look at that shirt you've had for 15 years and you know it looks awesome on you, which it does, and then I bet it makes you happy. Does it make you happy that you exactly?
Absolutely. I mean, even like the holes under the armpits that I have sewn up, it's a silk shirt. And so it's going to fray. And I have sewn those holes up so many times, but I still remember where I was when I bought this shirt, who I was with, what the store was. I mean, it's been an article of clothing that has just lasted and lasted. And there's nothing worse than going to your closet and recognizing that you have a closet full of clothes, all of which you hate and don't bring you joy. You know, it's the Marie Kondo effect of like, if it doesn't give you joy, then why are you doing it? I love what you said about the psychology of lack, that mindset of like constantly needing more and how unhealthy that is. So talk to us now about our civic duties.
Okay, I'm so excited. So I've served my local government for 3 years. I was very, very involved in canvassing, phone banking since I was in college. Like I've been very, very active. And I think it's one of the best things you can do. Absolutely. Making a practice of writing businesses and writing your legislators. Sierra Club, I've done this for multiple states. Almost every single one has them. If you Google your state Sierra Club bills, it will show you all of the environmental bills that are currently in progress in your state legislature. And it has the bill number and the Sierra Club says, we want it, we don't want it. And it's so easy. They break it down. They make it so simple. You can just copy and paste that, throw it in an email to your legislator and say, hey, I'm your constituent. You represent me. And this is how I feel about this. And this is why I feel this way.
Yeah.
And I've been talking with a lot of people who are very nervous because they just don't know how to start. And I get it. I mean, I think especially in 2020, we all have hyper social anxiety because we haven't seen humans in months. It was how do I interact with humans? I've forgotten. So it makes it even harder. And we have new politicians in office, they're settled in next February. I'm going to start doing monthly live write-ins for businesses and legislators on my Instagram. And I'm really excited about it. We're all going to do it together. And I'm going to walk people through how to do the process, how to write an email, how to hopefully get a response. and add on that outward accountability. And if I can give an example of a business I recently wrote, La Colombe Coffee. They have this plastic rim around their aluminum cans. And I basically sent them an email and said, look, I'm really disappointed that you have this plastic lid because it has to be separated. The lid won't be recycled. It's too small. It ruins the recyclability of the aluminum because most people won't separate them. And I simply said, I'm going to be making a TikTok about it and I'm going to post it to my 300 plus thousand followers. And I did. And just last week, I got off a meeting with their internal team because they saw the video. The video blew up. It's been viewed more than 3 million times. Or that's wrong. I'm sorry. It's 1.8 million now. I'm sorry. Because I did it to Instagram and TikTok. So it's about 1.8 million views. Thousands of comments. So they saw it and the video and they read my email and they're basically like, oh no.
Yeah, we need to make a change here. We need to make a change.
Do something. So yeah, I got off a meeting with our internal team and I'm going to be signing an NDA, so I can't say much, but basically it's positive. That's all I'll say is it's positive. And that's all it took. It was one email, and one video. And right. That was it. And then I'm talking to their internal team about their packaging. And that's the way it works is that's all it takes. An email, a video, being able and willing to just stand up and say something. And there's also so many organizations. I know I mentioned the Sierra Club, the Sunrise Movement. The name just slipped my mind, but there are a lot of organizations. Oh, Citizens Climate Lobby. That was the other one where people also plug in and intentionally try and get involved in local government. So there's no reason you have to do it by yourself. Mm-hmm. And I think one of the best things to do is plug into an existing organization and structure that will really help guide you to help you make more impactful changes.
Absolutely. Getting in with people who believe like you believe is always such a good feeling. It feels like you've kind of come home. And I think what you're mentioning is the power of the individual. And that is a critical thing that I think, especially Americans, we need. We need to feel like our voice matters. And the cool thing is you got a company's attention, and instead of saying like, we don't care, they actually are saying, how do we actually do this? How do we make it work? And the greatest news is after you go through whatever you're going to go through with them, you'll be a customer of theirs for life, and you'll be willing to tell people that, hey, my individual voice, and because you guys all supported this, we got the attention and we made a positive change in the world. And that, I think, is all of our life mission. Our life mission is to cast a vision for the world we want to live in and then create it and make sure that it happens. Tell us now some of your absolute go-to must-have zero-waste items. You and I met because of Thinx period-proof panties, which are life-changing and sustainable. What else? You know, what? Go beyond just the glass water bottle and tell us some things we haven't thought about.
So Thinx, obviously, is one of my top five. Always has been, always will be. The top number one slot is a bidet attachment for your toilet. Hands down, favorite slop. On average, Americans flush 27,000 trees down the toilet every single day.
Wow.
That's, what? That's so mind-blowing to me. That's so many trees. And one of the, and you know, there was the great toilet paper shortage of 2020 we'll be telling our grandkids about for years to come. And I wasn't worried at all because I had a bidet attachment. And It's one of the best ways to reduce paper use. And before anyone thinks, I'm just going to stop the thought before anyone thinks it, well, if you're using water, then isn't it wasting water? Isn't it more eco-friendly to use paper? And I'm going to stop you right there because it takes 37 gallons of water to make one roll of toilet paper. So unless you're planning on using 37 gallons of water, which you're not going to, like, you just have to leave it running for a really, really long, long time, you'll be fine. Especially because the average American goes through 3 rolls of toilet paper a week.
That is, seriously?
Yeah, according to Scientific American, yeah. And if you're, it's probably family rather than individual person, on average, a 2-3 person unit, 3 rolls of toilet paper. So yeah, if you're using 100 gallons of water to wash your butt every week, you probably have some other issues.
Well, and the great thing about bidets is not only can they help reduce waste, but they also reduce the risk of urinary tract infections, especially in elderly people who become more at risk for urinary tract infections. And so if you're a woman who struggles with urinary tract infections, don't just use the bidet after you go to the bathroom, but use it after you have sex, use it after you masturbate so that you're cleaning all of that out so that you get less likely to have vaginal, urinary, or booty infections. They all are reduced by the use of a bidet, which is amazing and makes it yet another reason to try a bidet. I think Americans are a little squeamish about it, but they're so nice. They're so nice, especially when you can control the water temperature. And as one of my friends put it, he said, well, we installed a bidet and you can decide if you want the sprayer to go in the front or the back. And it's pretty accurate, you know, and it does. It cleans it all up. Okay, so thanks. And then a bidet. What are some of the other of your top must-have items around the house?
This is one that people really love to really... I think that's what's so amazing is that my favorite swaps are some of the ones people are most hesitant to make. And also, I think some of the ones that have the easiest and best impact. So this one, people really love to fight me on. They don't know how it's possible. Catherine, how is it possible to live without paper towels? Let me tell you, it's very possible.
I've been doing it for years. It's the easiest thing ever to just stop using. I mean, oh my gosh, what do you think your great grandmother used? A hand towel. This is not rocket science, people. I totally agree with you. Yes, I can imagine the pushback, but it is the simplest thing ever.
It is, because the motion is the exact same. You know, if you have a spill, you go like this. For those of you who are listening, you wipe the spill up. And then when you have a cloth towel, you similarly wipe the spill up. It's the same thing. And then if it's really, really dirty, you just rinse it and just leave it over your sink or over your stove just so it can dry. And when it's dry, you just throw it in the hamper. It doesn't take any more time. You will save so much money. My recommendation is bar towels. If you're going to buy them, bar towels are really, really good because they are meant for absorbing water. They're so good at it, or absorbing liquid, let me rephrase. And I recently made some soup and spilled it everywhere. It looks like Quentin Tarantino directed a soup making video. So splatters everywhere. It went everywhere. And I had one towel. And I just went and I videoed myself doing it. And I just cleaned up the whole stove with one towel. And the amount of DMs I got from people shocked that it was possible to use a reusable towel to clean up that much mess, which would have taken half a roll of paper towels. They were mind-blowing. My favorite thing about paper towels is they were a mistake product. They were never meant to be invented. Paper towels were accidentally too tightly, too thickly wound toilet paper. And then they were sitting on them and they were thinking, what are we going to do with these way too thick towels? And so it took a campaign, a 40-year campaign to convince the American people that they need paper towels. But man, after years of trying to force people to buy this disposable product, because if you think about it, I mean, in the 1930s, who was going to waste their money on a disposable product?
Mm-hmm, mm-hmm.
It didn't make any sense. No one was going to spend money on that. everyone reused everything because they had to.
Yeah.
And after 40 years, they finally convinced the American people. It took until about the 70s, really, to convince people to use paper towels. But boy, when they did, they took off and we've never looked back.
Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. And so if somebody is saying, like, there's no way that, you know, I can recycle and get rid of my paper towels and the this and the that, what do you think are some small things that have the biggest environmental impact? You know, should people be more concerned about water waste or paper waste? You know, where are kind of, is there a hierarchy of, like, if you can only do this one thing, do this one thing?
Once these things become habit, you don't recognize you're doing them. And the fact is they don't. Most of these things take an equal amount of time to do the wasteful thing as it does to do the less wasteful thing. And once you get the hang of it, you don't notice you do anything differently. I don't spend hours of my day wiping up spills with cloth towels and using my bidet attachment, right? It doesn't take any more time. And so you definitely, I would say, just start with one thing. And then once you realize how easy it is and how simple it is, and you've mastered it, then move on to the next. But my absolute number one recommendation is composting. That would probably be the biggest, most impactful change you can make. On average, around 50% of a home's, what a home throws out is organic matter that could otherwise be composting or could otherwise be composted. And on average, 16% of all methane emissions in the United States come from landfills. This is organic matter that's unable to decompose. Landfills are designed for storage, not decomposition. There's no air, the food scraps are not going to break down, and methane is on average 30 times more powerful than carbon, which means it stays in the atmosphere longer and causes more warming than carbon does. So it's worse than carbon emissions. And it's such an easy thing that can be done at your home. And there's so many different ways you can do it. Of course, you can have vermicomposting, which is with worms. You can have a tumble bin. This is one of my favorites. It's a bin where you put the things in, and there's a little handle and you crank it, and then it all just breaks down in about a month. It's crazy. The Bokashi bin, that's B-O-K-A-S-H-I. They use enzymes. You can buy one. It's a bucket. It's about the size of a trash can you put under your sink. And there's enzymes, and you put the enzymes in the bucket, and then it basically disappears. It's wild. Of course, there are so many different ways that you can compost. And as someone who is a terrible, terrible composter, I am awful, probably one of the world's worst. And I have sent 2,000 worms to worm heaven, and it haunts me. It haunts me. I'm terrible at it, but I'm still breaking my food scraps down. It's still getting done. And it like I said, it's one of the best things you can do.
Absolutely.
Smell. And it does not smell.
No, it doesn't smell. And it's easy to do just about anywhere. And then you get free fertilizer that's not full of artificial chemicals and artificial crap that you're now putting onto the ground, which you don't really think about, then becomes in your water runoff, and it just perpetuates the dirtiness of the entire planet. Last but not least, if there are people who are inspired to get going and to try some zero waste living, or at least reduce the amount of waste living, of course you can come and follow Catherine over at Going Zero Waste on Instagram. Are there any other books, resources, websites that you would send people to where they can get some easy practical tips? Of course, they can check out your book, 101 Ways to Go Zero Waste, which helps them to break down eco-friendly, sustainable living in a step-by-step process. But where can people go to get some inspiration?
Yeah, so I actually run a book club. So now that you mention it, I run a book club. We read about one book every 2 months. Tonight is book club. Actually, we're reading All We Can Save. I love this book. This book is such a good, hopeful, and actionable book. And it's one of my favorites. So basically with book club, we read through some of my favorite eco-friendly reads. And then we just meet together for an hour via Zoom and chat about the book that we just read, what we liked about it, and how we can find and apply it to our daily lives. So some of the books we've read was Esther Generation, which I talked about earlier today, Sustainability, A History, Braiding Sweetgrass, which is one of my all-time favorites, The Story of Stuff, and then All We Can Save is what we've read this year. So those are some of my all-time favorite books, and I would highly recommend anyone who's interested to join. We would love, love, love to have you.
Absolutely. Well, Catherine, thank you so much for coming and sharing your perspective on the world and teaching us that taking care of the environment is also a way that we care for ourselves as well as all of our human family. Thank you so much for coming on the Lindsay Elmore Show.
Of course. Thank you so much for having me.
I am so excited to tell you, podcast family, that Thinks, your favorite period absorbing underwear, is launching activewear. That's right. As of January the 12th, 2021, you now have period protection even when you head to the gym. Now, if you've listened to the show, you know that Thinks has been absolutely life-changing for me. I'm going on over a year of only using Thinks for period protection. And now there is an activewear line that features cycle shorts, training shorts, leggings, and leotards with the signature Thinks period-absorbing layers built right in. They come in three cute colors: black, kale, and heather gray, and they come in sizes between extra small and extra large, and plus sizes are coming later on this year. That means that whatever resolutions that you have made this year, you can tackle one tiny habit at a time. Whether it's yoga, stretching, being at the gym, working out on home equipment, or simply walking down the street after a workout at the gym, you can now feel confident because each of these products is there to be used either on its own or as backup depending on your flow. The training shorts and leotards hold up to 5 tampons worth of menstrual flow. The leggings, which I have a pair of and absolutely love, hold 3 regular tampons worth, and the cycle shorts hold up to 2 regular tampons worth. Best of all, the leggings and the cycle shorts come with heating pad pockets. So if you're working out somewhere that it's cold outside, you can simply slip in some pocket warmers to stay warm throughout your entire training session. Period active wear is here, and all of the essentials you need, no matter what kind of activity you're doing, is there to give you the protection and the comfort that you need to have an active period. If you want to get started with some of the active wear or any of the other Thinks period proof absorbing panties, go ahead and head to www.shethinks, that's shethinx.com/Lindsay Elmore, that's shethinks.com/Lindsay Elmore, to save $10 off of your first order. Your workout activity on your period has never been better. Shop now, shethinks.com/Lindsay Elmore. While it is true that not all of us can go completely zero waste, there are a few things that you can do in your everyday life that help to reduce your environmental footprint. Here in my house, one of the easiest things is, like Catherine said, getting rid of paper towels. I also have transitioned from all plastic containers, which ultimately do disintegrate or get stained with food waste or whatever, into glass containers, which tend to last a lot longer. And even if you have to replace the lid, you're not replacing the entire storage container. You're simply replacing one piece of it. Another thing which I want to focus on in this segment today is composting. So composting is something I have been doing for a long time. I've composted in multiple different homes. I've never done indoor composting, but I know that some of our listeners have. And so I started composting way back when I was living in Alabama as a way to reduce my food waste, because one of the lessons that I teach within the Clean Slate Cleanse is that when you throw away food and it begins to ferment without exposure to oxygen, this leads to the production of potentially toxic gases, which then get into the atmosphere. And because we're constantly throwing away so much biodegradable waste alongside plastic, the problem just compounds and compounds to where we're giving off a lot of toxic fumes off of landfills when really we could be using all of these food scraps to build healthy soil. Now, I'm not the best composter, I will not lie to you. But that said, if you can turn your food waste into dirt on a regular basis, and it's easy, it's basically free, it doesn't stink, it doesn't attract rats and mice like some people say it does. Only bad compost does that. But if you do it well, you are going to help stabilize the pH of your soil. You're going to enhance the growth of essential bacteria within your soil. And you are going to allow your plants to effectively use nutrients, which allows them to grow healthier. You also encourage earthworms to come into your garden's neighborhood, which can help to aerate the soil and produce even more nitrogen-rich and nutrient-rich soil for your plants to grow in. So compost is made up of organic materials that break down in the soil. I think we commonly think of compost just as our food waste. So when we say food waste, let's take a step back. We're really talking about vegetable waste as well as a few things such as eggshells and coffee grounds, which aren't exactly plants, but they can help to be part of that organic material that can go into your compost pile. You want to avoid putting things into your compost pile that are really highly laden with fats. You also want to avoid putting meat into your compost pile, which will attract all of those vermin, which are not what you're wanting to do. When you think about composting, we think about having organic plant materials, such as those that come out of your kitchen. Things like cucumber peels and potato peels and carrot peels. I mentioned eggshells. If you have any leafy greens that perhaps you're not going to use, those can all go into the compost. Now, I have never had success doing only a kitchen-based compost pile. When I build my compost piles, I always add in brown waste as well. So brown waste can be things like fallen leaves. If you have particular grasses that are pH appropriate, certain grasses can go into compost piles. I also think about like the stalks of the plants that I'm growing. So getting a mix of this brown waste and this green waste, which the brown waste, remember, is all the outside stuff, all of the leaves that have fallen off of the trees, the stalks of the plants that you've grown, and the green waste, which is all of the food scrap that comes out of your kitchen, has been the easiest way for me to start a compost pile. Importantly, unless you have a composting toilet, you don't want to be intermingling human waste alongside a compost pile, especially if you're a beginner. I hear people say that have been doing it for a long time that, oh yeah, we do that and here's how it works and here's this. I don't do it. I just leave well enough alone and I say, look, I'm doing my part by reducing the amount of trash that goes into my trash can that contributes to the production of toxic gases when food ferments without exposure to oxygen. Compost is made of those organic materials that break down the soil, and it breaks down the soil while adding enrichness to its structure and adding essential nutrients. What happens is there are microorganisms, there are earthworms that decompose all of this brown and green waste and turn it into something called humus, which is the baseline material that allows for the production of rich and fertile soil, which is also responsible for producing really healthy plants. There are many different ways that you can create your own compost pile. You can start with a bin, you can start with an enclosure, you can start with containers. I've seen people that are more experienced with compost take pallets and just lay some permeable material so that oxygen can still flow through, and their compost just builds right on top of that. So in addition to our leaves and garden plants, remember that paper can also go into your compost. So newspaper and straw, certain grass clippings. If you do have chickens or you have cows, certain types of manure can go into the compost pile as well. Kitchen scraps like our vegetables, fruit peeling, eggshells, coffee ground, all go in there. But remember, no meat, no fat, no bone products get added into our compost pile, as this can attract parasites as well as attracting vermin. If you can, layer your materials of green and brown, and remember that you're going to either turn your compost on the regular, or you can do like I did and take a 50 gallon drum. I guess it's not 50 gallons. I guess it's more like 25 gallons, but it's a big old drum. And we set it on a base that allows it to rotate. So what we're doing by mixing in this green and brown material is adding carbon as well as nitrogen to our compost piles. Now, when it comes to making compost, balancing moisture and air are absolutely vital. You want your compost to be wet but not soggy, and you always want to be sure that you are turning your compost, as this is going to help speed up the decomposition process. Now, when it comes to speeding up the decomposition process, I totally cheat and I am not even ashamed of it. I purchase worms. And you may say, oh my gosh, you can purchase earthworms? You absolutely can. All you have to do is purchase it from, and they're not paying me to say this, I genuinely love this company this much and have been using their products for years. Head to Uncle Jim's Worm Farm and you can buy live worms. You can buy red worms, you can buy night crawlers, you can buy all kinds of worms. And you may think, oh my God, that's disgusting. But they come in a bag and all you do is add a little bit of water to them, and then you just put them in and around your compost pile, which is going to help to get your compost going quickly so that you don't have to worry about ants coming in, parasites coming in, because the ants are not there. They're not your friend. The ants are eating all of your compost and not allowing it to actually compost. And the worms also help to aerate everything and eat through it. And their excrement is extraordinarily valuable for your compost pile. So when I made, and I guess I shouldn't say I, when Derek made our compost bin, all we did was took a big drum, we drilled holes in it to allow for air to circulate, cleaned out the bin, and then layered in our layers of leaves and then food waste and then leaves and then food waste, etc. All of that is going to help you to build your compost pile really, really effectively. It's super simple. Once you start composting, it genuinely is one of the easiest things that you can do to go zero waste. And you end up creating really rich, vibrant soil that can help you to produce more nutrient-dense plants even on your own property. So I'm curious, have you ever composted? What are the ways that you go zero waste in your home? And if you haven't, maybe take a look around and just say, what is one small thing that I can do today that helps to reduce my environmental impact? The Lindsay Elmore Show is written and produced by me, Lindsay Elmore. Show segments are produced by Sue Procco and Kelsey Lorman. Production design, sound design, and editing is by Jive Media. If you have a question about this or any other episode of the podcast, send us an email to hello@lindsayelmoreshow.com. And hey, since you're still here, take a moment to subscribe, rate, and review this podcast. And while you're at it, go over and follow us on Instagram @LindsayElmoreShow. This helps us bring the pod to more people.